Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Line Mates and Study Dates by Eden Finley and Saxon James, narrated by Alexander Sandys and Iggy Toma. Chapter 1. Asher. I'm gonna go do something stupid. Those were the words I said right before I followed through and overshot it. Because I didn't do something stupid last night. I did something fundamentally messed up. Well done, Asher, you eternal man-child. The heavy weight spooning me shifts, and I close my eyes and mutter silently, oh, there's no place like home. There's no place like home. Except there's a gigantically big, huge, stupid problem with that. This is my home. It's Ezra fucking Palaszczuk who needs to get out of my bed and this house before any of my little brothers and sisters see him in here with me. Or worse yet, if my older brother sees him. I elbow Ezra and whisper, you need to go. The deep moan in my ear was sexy last night when I was drunk, but now it makes me cringe. Not because he's a dude, but because of who he is. Come on, I thought we could have some more fun before he kicked me out. My brother will kill you. Wesley? Please, he never stays mad at me long. He loves me. I know. That's why I fucked Ezra in the first place. Alcohol is an evil mistress. It takes those devious what-ifs and turns them into reality. Sleeping with my brother's best friend should have been reserved for when West really pissed me off. Instead, on a drunken whim, I thought fooling around with Boston's hottest defenseman was a brilliant idea. No one has ever accused hockey players of being smart. Even I know this is crossing a line. Which, yeah, I would have been prepared to do when I really wanted a reaction, but for once, this wasn't one of those times. Why did Ezra come visit my brother while I was all, I shudder, vulnerable? Ew, that's gross. Go away, you useless emotion. Ezra runs his big hand down my chest and I elbow him again. Get out, I mumble. Fine. He stands and pulls on his sweats, but he only gets them up to his thighs when footsteps thump down the stairs and my bedroom door slides open. I use the term bedroom loosely because it's actually the basement of our parents' old clapboard house. It's dark and freezing, and the makeshift sliding door West installed for my privacy doesn't have a lock. But unless I wanted to share with one of my siblings, it was this or camping in the damn yard. Asher, you have to... West's voice cuts off when he sees Ezra pulling up his goddamn pants. My brother's hardened gaze turns to me, ire filling his green eyes that match mine. Not much, I snap. I don't even know where my hostility comes from half the time. It could be a number of things. The top of the list would be losing our father and stepmother in a car accident a year ago, and West guilting me into giving up my spot in the NHL to help him raise our siblings. He said he needed help and didn't want to hire a nanny, and that he didn't want to uproot the kids' lives more than they already had been after losing our parents. West gave me the choice, of course, but it didn't feel like much of one. I wasn't going to leave them in the sole hands of Wesley Dalton. Yeah, there's a part of me that wants to escape, but another part has the obligation to stay. If West can give up his career in the NHL for them, I can postpone mine. Maybe Buffalo will still want me when I graduate from college, and maybe they won't. But by then my draft contract with 4-year exclusive rights to Buffalo will be over, and I can try my hand as a free agent. Until then, my life is no longer just mine, but also West's, Zoe's, Rye's, Hazel's, Bennett's, and Emmett's. Okay, maybe I do know the source of my hostility after all, but that doesn't change anything. Acknowledging I'm being an irrational shithead doesn't make me stop being one. It's impossible to rein in the asshole inside me. I've given up trying. West folds his arms across his wide chest and avoids looking at me as he says to Ezra, "Now you've gotten what you wanted, you can go back to Boston." Then he turns in my direction. "You need to take Hazel, Bennett, and Emmett to hockey practice." He spins on his heel and leaves the room. That's it? That's all I get for screwing his ex-teammate? I don't know whether to be pissed off or scared. When West is angry, he yells. Our screaming matches over the years have been the definition of sibling rivalry. But ever since Dad died, he doesn't give a shit about fighting. Either that, or he's holding it all inside and will one day explode. I turn to Ezra. What did he mean you got what you wanted? Your brother used to be fun, but ever since he moved home, he's all, I can't go out, I can't leave the kids, I'm a big boring bore. I rub my temples. I'm sure there were more options for you back in Boston. Yeah, but I was hoping if I made the drive out here, your brother might finally take me up on the offer to go out. I scoff. Heh, not likely. Don't know if you've noticed, but his life has drastically changed in the last year, which is exactly why he deserves a night out. I desperately want to ask Ezra what exactly a night out with the two of them would entail, because my brother is elusive when it comes to his party life. The rumors swirling around him in hockey circles are full of wild stories even I wouldn't be able to keep up with, and I've never had the guts to ask if they were true or not. There are some things I just don't want to know about my brother. I roll onto my stomach and throw my pillow over my head. I'm hungover, and Ezra is still rambling. Suddenly, West is all Mr. Serious and responsible. It's weird and unnerving. There's been a cosmic shift in the universe, and that shit's unnatural. Can't he take the hint? Why are you still here? You were a lot nicer last night. Alcohol makes me nice. Get out. I'm going. I peek under my pillow as Ezra throws my clothes at me. But you need to get up and take the kids to hockey. I'm like a damn taxi service. Although, if I'm honest, I don't mind driving them around and taking them to hockey. They lost both their parents, and now have two fuckboys who don't know what they're doing trying to make sure they get through their teen years safely. They're dealing with enough shit without adding my ruined life plans to their conscience. It's not their fault our parents died. It was a damn moose in the middle of the road that left them parentless and West out of his element and needing help. West may be acting responsible, but he isn't fooling me. Once a fuckboy, always a fuckboy. It's why I don't fight it anymore. I finally get up and dress. It's the beginning of what is going to be a long-ass summer. West is coaching at CU for their summer camp. Zoe and Reese are old enough to be left on their own, but I'm responsible for Hazel, Bennett, and Emmett, who are luckily going to their own private day camp. All the while, I get to go to summer classes because my freshman year didn't go well. I don't expect my sophomore one to go any better, but if I want to play hockey, I need a C-grade average. At this point, I can only see me reaching that with extra credit programs. Fun times. I just want to play hockey. If the universe wasn't a cruel bitch, I would be in Buffalo living my NHL dream instead of playing college hockey. I pause at my bedroom door. How the hell am I supposed to play this? If it's true that everyone has an angel side and a devil side, my angel side is telling me to apologize, but the darkness inside me won't allow it. The words, "I'm sorry," don't fall from my mouth often, or at all. I make my way upstairs and hear West and Ezra in the kitchen. "Are you kidding me?" West hisses. "My little brother?" I stay hidden around the corner where they can't see me. "It was only sex," Ezra says. "Who cares?" West sighs. "Ugh. It can't be like that for me, and it shouldn't be for him either. Don't you get it? One wrong step and our siblings end up in foster care." My stomach churns, and I don't think it has anything to do with my hangover. "Okay, I'm sorry. Won't happen again," Ezra says. "You're damn right it won't. Go back to Boston, Ez." "If that's what you want." Ezra's loud footsteps move toward the door, and then he appears in front of me. He gives a cocky smile. "See you around, little Dalton." I hate being called that. Little Dalton, Mini Dalton. Everyone in hockey does it, and it's annoying. I'm always being compared and always have to live up to the expectation Wesley Dalton set. Ezra leaves, the door clicking shut behind him. When I round the corner, West is packing the kids' lunches to take to camp. This is where I'm supposed to speak, but I've got nothing. I'm surprisingly flat. I usually thrive off tension, but I know I messed up this time. His stormy eyes meet mine, and his mouth opens, but then Bennett drags his ass past me to get to the fridge. In an epic brother stare down West and I have perfected over the years, words are said without actually speaking. Bennett picks up the OJ and leaves again with the whole carton. I swear that kid is half orange juice, and thank fuck 9-year-olds can't pick up on tension in a room, or maybe they can, and he's smart enough to get out of here as fast as possible. "Why are you the way that you are?" West starts. "Well, that's a good question. I go to answer that. Maybe it's because I've already lost too much in my 21 years, and that everyone and everything else can go fuck itself." But he holds up his hand. "Never mind. I know why you do the shit you do." His whole body slumps in defeat. "It didn't mean anything. Like that makes it any better. Teammate code, don't date siblings. Not that Ezra and I have ever or will ever date in the conventional meaning of the word. Like he said, it was only sex." "There you go, missing the bigger picture again." West plants his hands on the countertop of the kitchen island. What's it going to take for you to put your head down this summer, study your ass off, and help me around here without all your attention-seeking behavior? Fuck you. Even if he has a point, just fuck him. You almost flunked out freshman year. Get your shit together and stop testing me. Your life for the next 8 weeks is kids, study, and more studying. Got it? Yay, how fun for me. Though it's not like I have anything better to do. The only friend I made this last year is moving to Montreal. Without Cohen, my social life is pretty much non-existent. I need to go, Wes says. Finish packing these and then get on the road. They can't be late for morning warm-up. I know that. I want to bite at him, but don't have the energy. Wes pushes past me, and it takes all my strength not to throw the kids' lunches at the wall. Even though our mom died when I was too young to remember, I do remember being told my whole life I need to find healthier coping mechanisms than my outbursts. It used to be hockey. Now it's sex and adrenaline. That feeling of pissing someone off so much to the point where I don't know if they're going to hit me or not. I long for that.
Are you and West fighting again?
The small voice of my 11-year-old sister Hazel makes me flinch. Not at all, I lie. I turn to her. Where West and I look like brothers, dark hair, green eyes, Hazel and our other half-siblings take after our stepmom, lighter hair, blue eyes. I soften my gaze. Of everyone in this world, my younger siblings are the only people I can honestly say I love. I slept in, and West is pissed you're going to be late for practice.
Is that all?
She doesn't believe me, but I'm not dragging her or any of the others into our shit. Promise.
Are we ready to go?
She asks. Yep, just need to finish these lunches.
I'll help.
We get on the road 5 minutes later, and as soon as I drop them off, I resist the urge to ditch school. It's hard, but I do manage to drag my ass to campus. If I want to keep playing for Colchester, I need to take these classes. I regret it as soon as my first class starts because all the information goes over my head. It's definitely going to be a long summer.
Chapter 2. Cole. Summer went way too quickly. I spent most of it interning for the Stem Cell Foundation in New York. And then, like every year, I flew to Miami for the last 2 weeks with Mom and Dad. It's the only 2 weeks of the year we get away from Dad talking nonstop about the love of his life. No, not my mom. Hockey. As head coach of the Colchester University hockey team, it takes up most of his time. Dad and I never get along better than when we're in Miami. It sucks because we used to be great. Right up until I turned 14 and realized that playing a sport I hated wasn't enough to gain Dad's approval. When I told my parents I was gay, they hugged me and said they love and support me. When I told them I was quitting hockey, Dad barely spoke to me for a month. So heading for the hockey arena instead of study group right now feels like a giant waste of time. I still can't believe you made that dumb bet, Katie says. Her hair is bubblegum pink this year, and she's recently had her nose pierced. But her face is delicate and doe-eyed, so she pulls the look off like some kind of cartoon jerk-off fantasy. If you're into that sort of thing. I'm not, which is why we're best friends. In my defense, without Foster Grant, I really didn't think Dad's team would make it to the regionals last year. Defending Frozen Four champs? Not make it to regionals? Do you need a head check? Okay. So maybe literally everyone in my life is more focused on hockey than I am. Mom occasionally drags me to the home games out of support for Dad, and I put up with it because the three of us go out for dinner afterward. It may not seem like it, but Coach Hogan is a family man. And it's amazing to see that not only are he and Mom still together, but they actually like each other. That's what I want one day. Not so much the traditional marriage and kids, but someone who will be there for me the way my parents are there for each other. Until then, there are a lot of queer men on campus I haven't had fun with yet. Why are you smiling? Katie asks. No reason. You'd have to be the only person I know who'd be smiling over losing a bet. Do you really want to play errand boy for a whole year? Equipment manager, thank you very much. I fail at forcing a haughty tone. And of course I don't. I had to give up my spot on the LGBTQ community committee for this. But I lost, so now I need to make the most of it. There's always a silver lining. Ugh, Your optimism is unnatural. What's the point of moping? It won't change anything. Besides, it's not like I'll need to talk to anyone, so I'll put in my earbuds and listen to coursework. What a riot. Supportive face, please. She bats her eyelashes, and the sweet smile she uses on her professors appears. A few things, babe. She counts on her fingers. The blue line is not a euphemism for drugs. You can't pet puck bunnies. And for the love of all that is good on this earth, when it comes to hockey players, remember Mama's rules. Look with your eyes, not with your hands. Don't worry, they play hockey. That's an instant boner killer right there. Between my teammates when I was younger and Dad, it became clear to me that the only thing hockey players are interested in is hockey. Guys with zero personality instantly lose 10 hotness points. See you tomorrow, ball boy, Katie sings. Even I know hockey doesn't have balls. Yeah, but it sounds better than puck boy. Laters! I heft my bag higher as I push my way through the doors. Thankfully, there are no jocks around yet, seeing as there's still a good hour until practice. But Dad wanted me to get here early to meet some of the assistant coaches. I walk down a hall filled with trophy cabinets and slow in front of the huge photo of the Frozen Four winning team from a season ago. Even though hockey and I will never get along, it makes me happy to remember Dad's excitement that night. Last season was a different story. They were a mess to begin with, somehow pulled it together to make it to regionals, and then food poisoning and injuries plagued them. It's actually kind of unfair that they lost because it wasn't that they played horrible. There were four players down. It's a shame it didn't happen a few games earlier, though, because then I wouldn't be here now. I wish I had the same passion for hockey that Dad does, but being on the ice felt like a chore, and seeing how different Dad would treat me when I played made me resent it. At home, he's always been warm and calm. On the ice, he treated me like any of his other players. It's not like I wanted special treatment. But Dad in coach mode is intense and intimidating, and someone I didn't like very much. It made me resent playing, but Dad could never understand that. Note to parents everywhere, don't judge your kid based on what you like. I make it to Dad's office and push inside without knocking. There are two others there already, and Dad introduces assistant coach Dalton and Beck, who I recognize as one of Dad's players from last season.
This is my boy Cole, Dad says. He didn't think we'd make it to regionals last year, and because of that bad call, he's our equipment manager this season. Anything you need, just let him know.
I'm happy to serve. Dad sees right through my sarcasm and levels me with a look.
You will take it seriously. This might not be your scene, but I expect things will run smoothly.
You hired a hockey phobe, not an idiot. I've got this.
See that you do. No offense, Beck says, sounding exactly like he's about to be offensive. But do you even know a thing about hockey?
I know enough.
He played for 7 years, Dad says. And there's that twinge of disappointment, clear as day.
You'd think 6 years later he'd be over it.
We've been through what I expect. He'll be fine. It's not all about the equipment, though, is it?
Dalton asks, eyeing me.
He's going to be dealing with the team as well. Do you really think you'll be able to handle testosterone-filled divas?
That turn of phrase reminds me of the guys I normally sleep with, and I can't help a quick laugh from slipping out. Yes, the divas will be fine. The equipment will be fine. I know what all the thingamabobs are called, and when I'm counting, I can do this thing called adding and subtracting. It's wild. Three jocks stare back at me, not appreciating my teasing. Fine. I've been top of literally all my classes since the 7th grade, and as much as I've tried not to, I know hockey and I know what's needed. I can handle the jocks, because I really don't give a damn about what a bunch of athletes think of me. And if any of them get too much, I'll play the daddy card. Dad sighs like he was really hoping I'd be on my best behavior. But despite me being flippant and not wanting to be here, I do plan on taking it seriously. It's one season, and then I'll be released into the wild again.
Come on, the team will start arriving soon.
Dad stands, and Beck moves to follow him. I'm about to head out the door too when Dalton calls me back.
Coach Hogan speaks highly of you.
I should hope so, he's my dad. It would be kind of shitty of him to talk down about me. For some reason, that makes Dalton hesitate.
Well, I just want to make sure you really do know the ins and outs of this job.
Lug equipment around, order new equipment, and have 25 hockey players treat me like their bellboy. How hard could it be?
There's other things, like...
Coach Dalton averts his gaze.
Keeping the players in line. Making sure they're not sneaking out of the hotel at away games. Telling us if you know of any drug use or rule breaking.
My eyes narrow. I didn't realize being a snitch was in the job description. That's exactly what I need. Angry jocks trying to find the guy who ratted them out for having fun.
My brother Asher plays on the team. He's an excellent player, but a bit of a loose cannon. The problem is your dad won't keep him on the roster if he gets into shit.
That's not my problem. That sounds like yours.
Like he listens to me about anything,
Coach Dalton says.
Look, all I'm asking is you keep an eye on him and tell me if he's doing anything he shouldn't be.
I mean this in the kindest way possible, but why would I want to do that?
You said you don't care what a bunch of hockey players think of you. Did you mean that?
Well, yeah.
Then you're not going to care about locking him in his room if you have to.
I might not, but last I checked, the law is pretty clear when it comes to holding someone captive. He finally manages a small smile, but even that looks like it takes effort. When I look at Dalton, all I see is bone-deep exhaustion, from his tired eyes to the slump in his shoulders. It makes me feel sorry for the man. Sorry enough to do as he asks? I'm not sure if he's lying about equipment managers taking on that sort of warden role or not, but am I willing to do it anyway?
I'm kind of out of options here, and I don't know what to do anymore when it comes to him.
Dalton's voice is soft. No, it's downright defeated. One more look into Dalton's expressive green eyes, and I have my answer. Fine, I huff. I'll attempt to rein in the wayward son, but I'm not making any promises.
No, totally.
He runs a hand back through his hair.
Just knowing there's one extra set of eyes on him helps.
How bad can this guy be? I get my answer half an hour later when a younger version of Coach Dalton stomps into the locker room a few minutes late. They both have the same dark hair and green eyes. But Coach Dalton has a few years' growth on his jaw and chin. His brother is clean-shaven. He throws his bag into his cubby with a loud thump, then drops onto the bench like he doesn't care that every person in the room is staring at him. He'd probably be good-looking if he wasn't scowling. But with a single menacing look, one thing is clear. Asher Dalton is trouble. Already I can tell that I'm not going to be looking out for the guy. I'm going to be babysitting him. And let's face it, probably failing.
Chapter 3. Asher. Sloppy! My brother yells when my attempt to make a pass fails to hit my teammate's blade. Hey, it's more words than he's spoken to me all summer, so there's that. Apparently, it took a couple of hours for the shock of seeing me and Ezra together to register, and then he hit a whole new level of angry. Silent treatment, achievement unlocked. And shit, maybe it worked, because all summer, I did what he'd told me to do. I studied my ass off. I dropped the kids off at hockey. I went to school. I kept my head down. And I still only scraped by with a C in all my classes. What do I have to show for it? A weakened body and slack playing. Hell, I'm slower than a lot of the freshmen out here. This is what happens when you spend all your time indoors and not working out. I don't know how nerds do it. After my brother's torture, then comes Coach Hogan with skating drills. Blue-red crossover, go! We don't get a break before he's calling out the next one. Dot drill! Over and over again, drill to drill, Coach Hogan doesn't let up. My lungs burn, and my muscles are starting to cramp. I am so unfit compared to a mere 8 weeks ago. Note to self, learn to read while running on a treadmill or something. Coach Hogan blows his whistle. Box skate! We all groan. He's never like this. He's a hard ass, but never this sadistic during training. Some of the guys in the locker room said he goes all out for the first practice of the year, but I wouldn't know. I was a late recruit last season. A few newbies ask under their breaths how I was drafted to the NHL when I skate slower than a turtle in mud, but they're not as quiet as they think they are. I'd like to tell them all to fuck off, but I can't even breathe, let alone speak. And then the worst thing that could possibly happen does. My gut churns, and my lunch tries to make its way back up. It's a sprint to the sideline so I can throw myself into the team box and hurl into a trash can. That might be a new record, Coach says, and I turn my head to find him looking at his watch. All right, practice over. Someone make sure Dalton is hydrated. Rossi, the year's captain, helps me off the ice. Kill me now. I'll never live this down. The familiar need to fight someone flares up. At least if they're distracted by my being an asshole, they won't focus on how weak I am. I'd rather people hate me than think I'm a joke. And yep, even though I hold my head up high as I walk into the locker room, I'm met with snickers all around. Great. Just great. Maybe I should have spent last year getting closer to Rossi or Sims, but instead I made friends with a guy who was graduating. Then again, that would have been difficult considering I took first-line center, a position both Rossi and Sims were gunning for. I start stripping down at my cubby and ignore everyone around me. I'm down to my jockstrap when a bottle of Gatorade is thrust in front of my face. Thanks, I murmur. No problem. I know from experience how hard Coach can push. He says that, but when I turn my head, it's not any of my teammates standing there. It's a guy maybe an inch or two shorter than my 6'1 frame, with dirty blonde hair, warm hazel eyes, and a cute smile. He looks too thin to be a hockey player. He leans in. He always goes too far on day one. Likes to pretend to be tough for all the new kids, but I'll let you in on a little secret. He lowers his voice. He's a big teddy bear underneath all that. Coach Hogan, a teddy bear? Is this guy high? If you say so. I'm Cole. That killer smile widens. Cole Hogan. My face falls. Coach is my dad. And this year I'm your equipment manager, so if you need anything, let me know, and I'll give it to you. My cock twitches. What he said wasn't supposed to sound sexual, but apparently my body is going to take it that way. I mentally tell it to calm the hell down because having sex with a cactus would be less dangerous than fooling around with Coach's son, even if that destructive part inside me is already reveling in the fallout that tryst would bring. As I watch Cole's gaze move over my almost naked form, I have to wonder if there was sexual innuendo implied after all. I clear my throat. Thanks for the drink. Move away, Asher. Move away before you do or say something Asher-like. No problem. I step away from him and head for the showers, realizing I still have the bottle of Gatorade in my hand and not my towel. Fucking hell! Cole's still standing by my cubby when I march back in there and trade them out. He chuckles as I walk away again. Only now I realize I still have a jock strap on. I strip that off and throw it across the room so I don't have to go back another time. West beats me home because we took separate cars, and as soon as I step inside the house, its obvious pandemonium has broken out. Welcome to my life. The twins are yelling at each other over whatever Xbox game they're playing. Zoe's yelling at West about being too young to look after four kids while he and I play stupid hockey. And Hazel's at the dining table, noise-canceling headphones on, with her laptop open in front of her. Okay, then. I turn to Bennett and Emmett. Find a way to problem-solve between yourselves, or guess what? Neither of you get to play the Xbox. That shuts them up fast. Now Zoe's turn. Why are you too young to look after the others?
Because they don't listen,
she screeches.
Reese went out, I don't know where. I've been trying to call you, he just left.
He left, I say. He's 13. Why in the fuck did he think it was okay to go out this late at night?
Yes, what was I supposed to do? Leave the others here and go after him? This is too much pressure. This is unfair.
Oh, honey, you want to talk to me about unfair? I give her my, are you fucking kidding me, glare, but then her blue eyes fill with tears and I remind myself she's 15. I'm 21 and can barely handle all the chaos three preteens and a 13-year-old bring. Last year, our system worked. Zoe was with the kids in the afternoons until West and I got home from practice, and West would stay home while the team was at away games. But I guess all the kids have had a hormonal surge, or maybe last...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?